Paramahamsa Parvajikachara Satara Satishri Shimnas Vangris Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Charya Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gananda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13 What is it, text 39 and 40? Okay. Two verses here, they are somewhat different topics, so I'm going to be speaking more on text 40, so I'll just read 39 and we'll do 40 together. So 39. Yudhishthira vacha naham veda gatim pichur bhagavan pagata vita ambhava hatakutrata Bhagata Chattapasvini. Maharaj Yudhisthira said, O godly personality, I do not know where my two uncles have gone, nor can I find my ascetic aunt, who is grief-stricken by the loss of all her sons. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Yudhisthira, as a good soul and devotee of the Lord, was always conscious of the great loss of his aunt and her sufferings as an ascetic. An ascetic is never disturbed by all kinds of sufferings, and that makes him strong and determined on the path of spiritual progress. Queen Gandhari is a typical example of an ascetic because of her marvelous character in many trying situations. She was an ideal woman as mother, wife, and ascetic, and in the history of the world, such character in a woman is rarely found. Text 40. Repeat. Parnadarayvapare
Parnadarayvapare
Bhagavan Paradarshana
Bhagavan Paradarshana
Bhagavan Paradarshika
Bhagavan Paradarshika
Atababase Bhagavan
Atababase Bhagavan
Narado Munisattama Parnadarayvapare Bhagavan Paradarshaka.
Bhagavan Paradarshaka.
Atababhase
Bhagavan.
Narado Muni Sattama.
Narado Muni Sattama.
Parnidharai Vapare. Bhagavan Paradarshaka. Atababhase
Bhagavan.
Narado Muni Sattama. The word Karnadara, captain of the ship. Iva, life. Apare, in the extensive oceans. Bhagavan, representative of the Lord. Paradarshika, one who can give directions to the other side. Atta, thus. Ababhase began to say, Bhagavan, the godly personality, Narada, the great sage Narada, Muni Sattama, the greatest among the devotee philosophers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. You were like a captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of the philosopher devotees, began to speak. Purport. There are different types of philosophers, and the greatest of all of those of them are those who have seen the personality of Godhead and have surrendered themselves in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Among all such pure devotees of the Lord, Devarshi Narada is the chief, and therefore he has been described herein as the greatest of all philosopher devotees. Unless one has become sufficiently learned philosopher by hearing the Vedanta philosophy from a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot be a learned philosopher devotee. One must be very faithful, learned, and renounced. Otherwise, one cannot be a pure devotee. A pure devotee of the Lord can give us direction towards the other end of nations. Devarshi Narada used to visit the palace of Maharaj Yudhisthira because the Pandavas were all pure devotees of the Lord, and the Devarshi was always ready to give them good counsel whenever needed. Om Jnanakam Dandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chaksarantanina Tasmai Shri Kurvimanaha Vanchakopa Trudisha Kripa Sindhi Vepacha Paditano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So two verses here glorifying great devotees. Verse 39 talks about Gandhari, who is glorified as a great ascetic. This word tapas vini is used, the last line of the verse, the last word of the verse. Being a great one who performs tapasya, austerity, or great ascetic. Of course, she is known as the most chaste and loyal of wives. When she learned of her marriage to Dhritarashtra, she found out that he was blind. Now, that would be very distressing, I think, to many young ladies, finding out that their future husband was blind. But she just accepted that, in fact, voluntarily blindfolding herself so that she would share in her husband's situation, his, you know, good and bad and everything within his life for the rest of her life, which is pretty amazing. So she was known for her renunciation and her asceticism. And we see that she followed her husband to the Himalayas. Very difficult, very treacherous climb up into the mountains. She's an older lady by now, just willingly went and performed such austerities. And of course, they both became liberated by that. There's a little more description of her. I thought rather than my attempts to glorify Srila Prabhupada gave a very nice glorification in another verse in the first canto in 1948. And again, the last line of that verse is Gandharim cha tapasvinim. Again, talking about Gandhari is a great tapasvini. So Srila Prabhupada says about Gandhari. So Gandhari was so faithful, one of the most exalted, chaste wives mentioned in the Shastra. So when she was informed that her would-be husband is a blind man, Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, immediately she practiced austerity. Voluntarily, she closed her eyes with cloth that she would also be blind. My husband is blind, so although I am not, I must live also as blind. This is the beginning of austerity for Gandhari. So Gandhari was so faithful, one of the most exalted, chaste wives mentioned in the Shastras, that in all conditions she followed her husband. At last, when everyone was finished in the battle of Kurukshetra, no Kauravas, none of the sons or grandsons of Dhritarashtra was living, neither the Pandavas, still Gandhari was faithfully serving her husband. So Dhritarashtra went, according to the instruction of Madhura, went to the Himalayas. Gandhari followed. Gandhari never said, I am now old, I've lost my children, these nephews, they are taking care of me. Why should I go with my husband? No, she also went. So there are many good qualities in the Mahabharata about Gandhari. Therefore, she is described here as tapasvini. Tapasvini, very chaste, faithful wife, ideal wife, Gandhari. Therefore, in her actions, she was a great ascetic. Besides that, the shock which she had suffered because of the wholesale killing of her 100 sons and her grandsons also was certainly too much for a woman. But she suffered all of this just like an ascetic. So another one of the amazing women from the Srimad Bhagavatam gives such great example, not just as a great loyal wife or mother, but a great ascetic, great devotee in her own right, you know, who had, you know, obviously great powers based upon her asceticism and austerity. So in the next verse, verse 40, we talk about Narada Muni. And Narada Muni here is called the greatest of devotees by Maharaj Yudhisthira. And of course, Narada Muni appears throughout the Bhagavatam. He's a very, very familiar character. You know, we see him practically in every chapter, at least every canto of the Bhagavatam. So much involved in the pastimes of Krishna and of his great devotees. And there's some interesting words in this particular verse. First of all, it's called Karnadara Ivapare, the captain of the ship in a great ocean. It's a description we've heard before about the spiritual master, the guru, described as like a captain of the ship, right? Crossing a great ocean. What's that great ocean? The material world, the material universe. And he's paradarshika, one who can give direction to the other side. So not only is he crossing a great ocean, but he brings us along with him through his instructions, that we can also cross the ocean. And the final words here are Muni Satana, the greatest amongst devotee philosophers. So this is not some idle glorification or... I lost my glasses somewhere. Who needs to see that? And Ari couldn't see. Vichy perfection. Okay. So in many, many places in the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni is described in a very similar fashion. In 2942, Shukadeva says, Narada was the greatest of all sages and the greatest of all devotees. 4.13.3, Vidura says, I know that the great sage Narada is the greatest of all devotees. And Maitreya, later in that canto, says, the supreme devotee, the great Saint Narada. And finally, Krishna says, Shukadeva says about Krishna, 5.24.21, the supreme personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, sells himself to his devotees, such as Narada Muni. In other words, the Lord gives pure love to such devotees and gives himself to those who love him purely. So Narada Muni is in this very, very special place. Of course, he's the son of Lord Brahma. He's second in our disciplic succession. He's certainly one of the great acharyas, one of our great exemplars in devotional service. And he's always a constant companion with Krishna and Lord Narayan, and travels throughout the universe. And he helps devotees, not just he glorifies Krishna, of course, singing on his veena, but he makes so many devotees, and he preaches to so many devotees and gives wise counsel and help for people along the path of spiritual life. So here Narada was glorified as a great philosopher devotee. He knows the absolute truth, and he can give that to others. As Prabhupada says here, a pure devotee of the Lord can give us direction toward the other end of nescience. Nescience, of course, meaning ignorance. We are all in ignorance in this material world. But a great devotee like Narada Muni lifts that nescience, lifts that ignorance, and takes us to the other side, to knowledge. So, of course, this is also considered one of the qualities of the Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee of the Lord. Where the Kanishtha, the sort of beginning devotee, may have weak faith, might have some discussion with somebody, and he gets defeated. He doesn't know the philosophy well enough, and he actually might lose faith. The Majjhima, or the middle devotee, is better situated. He may not always know all the scriptural arguments, not know all the verses, but he has firm faith. His faith does not waver that this is the absolute truth. And then the Uttama Adhikari is described as not only having complete faith, but he knows the scriptures and he argues conclusively from scripture. So Majjhalila 22:66 says, one who is expert in logic, argument, and the revealed scriptures, and who has firm faith in Krishna, is classified as the topmost devotee. He can deliver the whole world. So this is the type of devotee Narada Muni is. And we've seen many other examples like this in our acharyas, how they it's interesting that sometimes devotees or Vaishnavas are considered to be sentimental devotees. They just chant and dance, you know, and they're just all about love and stuff. They're not very philosophical or very deep. That's obviously completely false, because we've seen such tremendous and most deep and insightful philosophers throughout our disciplic succession. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, the Prabhupada's spiritual master, is famous for defeating all of the smart Brahmins in his famous discussion about Vaishnavism and Brahmanism. And he just quoted verse after verse of scripture, one after another, until they had absolutely nothing to say in response. And of course, Lord Chaitanya himself showed the example, playing, although he was God, he played the part of a devotee. When Keshava Kashmiri, the greatest poet and scholar in the land, came to Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya asked him to recite some verses glorifying the Ganges River. And like he said, like the blowing of the wind, Keshava Kashmiri was able to recite and compose on the spot like 100 verses. And of course, Lord Chaitanya then proceeded to pick them apart one by one, remembering every single word he said and finding little grammatical flaws like that. And of course, the purpose was to bring Keshava Kashmiri to the point of becoming a devotee, not just being a puffed-up scholar, which he did. And Kashmiri became a great devotee. We saw Srila Prabhupada defeated many, many scholars, defeated scientists, defeated so many people on the basis of scripture. Prabhupada always knew the philosophy. He knew what to say. He always knew the answer. You couldn't pose a question that Srila Prabhupada would say, gee, I don't know, never thought of that, or I can't figure that one out. No, Srila Prabhupada was in full knowledge because he was a pure devotee of the Lord, and Krishna within the heart was giving him knowledge. And he was in his, of course, extensive knowledge of scripture. He was able to translate all of these scriptures from Sanskrit into wonderful English and wonderful purports, explaining it to us in ways that we could understand, even though we were not scholars and we didn't know Sanskrit. So we have so many examples like this. I was also thinking of Jiva Goswami, considering one of the greatest Vaishnava scholars ever. His six Sandarbhas are fantastic works of philosophy, of expositions of Vaishnava philosophy. There was one story about Jiva Goswami, that there was this other great scholar who was going around trying to defeat everybody. And so he went to Rupa Goswami, who was, of course, one of the leaders of Goswami's greatest devotees ever on the planet. And he says, "Debate me, and I will defeat you." And Goswami says, "All right, I give up." He says, "I don't want to debate you." He says, "Then sign this paper saying I won." "Okay, sure, you win." You know, so in other words, Rupa Goswami was so humble, he didn't care. He didn't want to waste his time in some debate. Then he went to Jiva Goswami, and Jiva Goswami wasn't very interested until he waves the paper. "Look, I defeated Rupa Goswami." Of course, Rupa Goswami is not only his uncle, but he considered his guru. He says, "No way. There's no way you could have defeated Rupa Goswami." He says, "He's my guru, and I can defeat you." And so he proceeded to just tear him apart, of course, in the debate. And, you know, the guy was, like, obliterated, the point that he was practically, you know, like, distraught. He didn't know what to do. It's like his whole sense of who he was in life was defeated or something. Of course, the interesting part of that is then, Rupa Goswami got mad at Jiva Goswami. He says, "We don't do that. You don't need to just show off our knowledge like that." He said, "Look, you know, this was of no..." Anyway, so he actually wouldn't even talk to Jiva Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami had to intervene and kind of patch things up. You know, so I mean, it was just a pastime between them, of course. And but it was it just shows the greatness of the scholarly abilities of pure devotees. But switching gears, what's the other side of that? It's not just scholarship. It's not just knowledge of scripture. It's not just some idea of having Vedantic knowledge, which is important. Because none of that is any value without devotion. Without Krishna consciousness, without understanding the conclusion of all that knowledge, it's simply academic exercise, a waste of time, theoretical knowledge. It's wonderful when properly applied, as we see by these great acharyas, but if it's only for the point of scholarship for its own sake, then very little value. One example was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was considered the greatest Vedic scholar of his time. Everyone came to him for spiritual knowledge about Vedanta. And so he took young Lord Chaitanya, new sannyasi. He wanted to help him because he was very attracted to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya was this wonderful, beautiful young man, sannyasi. So he said, "Well, here, let me help instruct you." And so he sat and he spoke with him for 7 days, all of this philosophy. Lord Chaitanya didn't say a word. Finally, after 7 days, Sarvabhauma says to him, "You haven't said anything. Do you not understand the Vedanta? Do you not understand the verses?" And Lord Chaitanya says, "Oh, I understand them perfectly. I just don't, your explanations confuse me." He says, "Oh, well, tell me a better explanation." And Lord Chaitanya proceeded to give him Vaishnava Siddhanta, the true understanding of devotional service to Krishna. And of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya totally became converted and became one of our greatest devotees, great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by that influence. You know, so this is the power that is there. On one hand, the power of the devotee to be able to convince through philosophy, but also the example that without devotional service, it's not of so much value. So a devotee is considered to be, in the Majjalila, where am I reading from? Chapter 22, verses text 70 to 71, Lord Chaitanya describes the Uttama Adhikari, the topmost devotee. And he says, "A devotee is considered superlative or superior according to his attachment and love." He actually didn't say by his scriptural knowledge, he said by his attachment and love. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the following symptoms have been given. Now this is a quote from the 11th canto. "A person advanced in devotional service sees within everything the soul of souls, the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna." consequently, he always sees the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the cause of all causes and understand that all things are situated in him. So, this is from 11.245. That the Uttama devotee sees systematically everything in relation to the Supreme Lord, and everything exists is eternally situated within the Lord. So this is really the qualification, that one has sufficient philosophical knowledge and understanding to draw the siddhanta, the proper conclusion. That conclusion is to know that Krishna is everything, that everything is related to Krishna, and to have love and attachment to Krishna. And through that love and attachment to Krishna and having one's heart purified, one is able to convince and convert others. So this is what we see in great devotees. It's not just their knowledge, but their purity. Many of the senior devotees probably had a similar experience. When I first saw Srila Prabhupada, I didn't understand all the philosophy. I didn't understand everything he said. But his purity shone forth. And that's what convinced me. That's why I wanted to become his disciple. Because I saw this person is completely pure. He knows the absolute truth, even if I don't understand all the words yet. And eventually, we were able to understand more and more as we took up the process of devotional service, asana bhakti, under Srila Prabhupada's instructions. The philosophy started becoming more and more clear, and greater understandings came about. So that's really the process. I want to talk a little bit more about descriptions of pure devotional service, since that's what our topic is today, Narada Muni as a topmost pure devotee. And one of the best descriptions Srila Prabhupada gives in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.25 is actually in the story of Narada Muni. And in this case, Srila Prabhupada's describing in relationship to the spiritual masters, Narada Muni. They're called the Bhaktivedantas, the great souls that were visiting where his mother was a maidservant. And he was able to serve these devotees. And thus, by their association and just taking the remnants of prasadam from them and being around them, associating with these great souls, Narada Muni became purified. And eventually, after performing austerities, he ultimately became the person that we know as Narada Muni. So anyway, Srila Prabhupada is describing the qualities of a pure devotee. Prabhupada says the qualities of a pure devotee mean attraction for the personality of Godhead's name, fame, qualities, pastimes, etc. Infection of the qualities of the pure devotee means to imbibe the taste of pure devotion always in transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. This transcendental taste at once makes all material things distasteful. Therefore, a pure devotee is not at all attracted by material activities. After the elimination of all sins or obstacles on the path of devotional service, one can become attracted, one can have steadiness, one can have perfect taste, one can have transcendental emotion, and at last one can be situated in the plane of loving service of the Lord. All these stages develop by the association of pure devotees. So, not only is the pure devotee completely attracted to the personality of Godhead and not attracted by material things, but they're able to bring others gradually through these different stages of bhakti to the same position. So, one of the essential things that's being described here about pure devotional service is one's motivation. It says here that the devotee has a transcendental taste and therefore is not at all attracted by material activities. So devotional service needs to be free from material motivation. And that's kind of the key for many of us in our own path in devotional service and our path towards purification along the way to pure devotion. And Chris has described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.6, Avai Punsang Paro Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Bhokshije Haitu Kepratiyata Yatma Supersedati. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. So that's, for me, one of the difficulty, being a haitukiya priyatiyata, an unmotivated and uninterrupted. Unmotivated means not having any material desires, but just pure desire to serve Krishna. And uninterrupted means that it's constant. It's all the time. I think we've all probably experienced times when we feel really ecstatic, or we feel really Krishna conscious, and we really have a great desire just to purely serve. And what happens an hour later? We may get a little distracted from that and not be so much in that mood. So in other words, our devotional service tends to be interrupted. There tends to be kind of a, you know, spiritual, material kind of fighting, almost fighting, you know, for dominance or predominance over each other. You know, now hopefully we become more and more, you know, it becomes less uninterrupted, and our motivation becomes less for material and more for the spiritual. And that's the path. That's the path of sadhana. It brings us along in that way. So, is it that the devotee, when he says unmotivated, what does it mean? The devotee has no motivation. It means he has no material motivation. But he does have self-interest. And actually, the self-interest is there with the jiva. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.19, it says, those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions create an atmosphere of materialism are ignorant of their real self-interest. Out of his causeless mercy, Lord Rishabhdev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. So, of course, that goal of life is service to Krishna. Reestablishing our relationship to Krishna, our loving service, relationship, you know, with Krishna, understanding his form, his activities, everything about Krishna, and also developing understanding of his holy name, attraction to the holy name of Krishna as being non-different from him. We could describe so many different things, but basically this we're talking about the self-interest of the living entity. Of course, the self, the real self, is the soul, and the soul has motivation. Now, often it may be spiritual, it may be material, and we can see that even in the material world, sometimes we talk about in the study of motivation, extrinsic or external motivation and intrinsic or internal motivation. Just like, for instance, if an activity is done just for an external reward or punishment, we say that's extrinsic. Like, I only go to work for a paycheck. We ask people, would you continue to work if you weren't paid? Most people say no. Now, some people might just really enjoy what they're doing and say, yeah, I would just do this anyway. That's more intrinsic motivation. Now, in a religious sense, one might perform religious activity for reward, I'll go to heaven, or to avoid punishment. I don't want to go to hell or have a lower birth. It's really an extrinsic, you know, motivation towards religious life or spiritual life. Now, intrinsic motivation means the activity is done for its own interests or enjoyment. One feels activity is meaningful, gives purpose, gives satisfaction. Now, people may experience that with some material activities if they're lucky, if they're fortunate, but it's a little deeper, the spiritual motivation. So spiritual motivation, if it's external, it means that we may do service for recognition, for position, out of religious duty, maybe for employment. Believe it or not, some people may come from a very poor situation in life, and joining the temple is a step up for them. Most of us it wasn't, it was the other way. But this is recognized in the scriptures. It's known as karma mishra bhakta or jnana mishra bhakta, that one has material mixing in devotional service. We're trying to perform pure devotional service, but sometimes it's mixed with karma, material activity, or jnana, mental speculation. As described in the Majjhima Lila 19.158, I think that's Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. Sometimes unwanted creepers, such as the creepers of desire for material enjoyment and liberation from the material world, grow along with the creeper of devotional service. The varieties of unwanted creepers are unlimited. Some unnecessary creepers growing with the bhakti creeper are the creepers of behavior unacceptable for those trying to attain perfection, such as diplomatic behavior, animal killing, mundane profiteering, mundane adoration, and mundane importance. All of these are unwanted creepers. If one does not distinguish between the bhakti creeper and the other creepers, the sprinkling water is misused because the other creepers are nourished while the bhakti creeper is curtailed. So in other words, while we're performing sadhana bhakti and trying to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, by, you know, we're watering the bhakti lata bija, the creeper of the seed of devotional service, we also may be watering some of these unwanted creepers or unwanted plants, as they're saying. And these are what are being described here, mundane profit, mundane adoration and importance. So because sometimes that happens. Due to one's devotional service, one might gain some position or gain some fame or something like that. And if that becomes what's important to one, it's missing the whole point. And these become weeds or obstacles that prevent us from advancing Krishna consciousness. Okay. So our intrinsic spiritual motivation is that's based upon the real interest of the soul. And that real interest of the soul is pure devotional service. So we want to perform sadhana, chanting, whatever, for its own sake and not for reward. For instance, if I'm a great kirtan leader, you know, in other words, I want to chant nicely to glorify Krishna, but not to glorify myself. And I give that example because I actually, you know, as everybody can see and know, I am not a great kirtan leader, and I've always wanted to be. So see, that's my mundane motivation. I think, well, I wish I could be a great kirtan leader. Well, it's not going to happen. So Krishna, you know, Krishna saved me from that anarta, I guess. Save me from that one. Okay. But the desire may still be there, see? That's what you have to work on. Otherwise, I'll have to come back another lifetime to fulfill that. Anyway, to the degree that we're not completely pure, we may have these material motivations. But sometimes they are the beginning. We may want to just have relief of misery or experience personal happiness. We tell people that, chant Hare Krishna, you'll be happy, right? Is that material motivation? Kind of, but I mean, but ultimately we know it means spiritually happy. In other words, the real happiness will come from the spirit soul, and that will override material happiness. Relief of misery is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Four types of people come to Krishna consciousness, right? Those in distress, those in need and want of money. In other words, people come for a variety of reasons, and they may be, even Bhagavad Gita says these are material reasons, but they're all considered pious people because they come to Krishna. That's the point. Then one becomes purified through the practice of Krishna consciousness. Okay? So even though we may have material desire, and we do, we have to have the right mood about that. The mood is, we don't want to have those material desires, we want to become purified. And there's a wonderful verse that I probably quote this one more than almost any verse in my classes, one of my favorites, Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20-27, where Krishna says, having awakened faith in the narrations of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. So the point is the devotee should always have firm faith in the process. And Krishna is saying, remain happy, don't become overly morose. Sometimes devotees can become despondent. Oh, I'm not making advancement. I'm so fallen, this and that. No, I mean, once some devotee was saying to Srila Prabhupada, I'm so fallen. I'm the most fallen. I was, you're not the most anything. You know, I mean, it's... No, I'm sure there's somebody more fallen than you. Somebody is in a weird shape. So, in other words, just remain fixed. Keep faith in the process. Continue with bhakti. Continue with the process of sadhana, despite difficulties. That's what Krishna is telling us. Right? And in the right mood. It says he sincerely repents such activities. Not that, oh, I think it's okay that I have material desires. It's not really okay. So when one feels a little bit contrite, you know, I mean, a little bit of guilt's not bad sometimes. Not too much. You don't want to, you know, wallow in it. But if it propels you to advance, to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, no, but just don't become too self-satisfied. Oh, I'm okay. I'm a devotee, so I can really do anything. And, you know, no. We want to have the right attitude. And Krishna's telling us what that is. Now, Vishnachakravarti Thakur has a nice purport on this verse. And one thing he says is, in these two verses, Krishna speaks of the initial state of a person qualified for bhakti. He is disgusted with the result of karma, ruling Vedic ritual and ordinary life, and disturbed by seeing and happiness it causes. But then he says, and I didn't write it down, but what he says after that is, the devotee has more attraction to Krishna and making advancement than he has for material life. That was a bad paraphrase. I didn't write down exactly. But that was the idea. Vishwanath says, basically the devotee is saying, in other words, yes, we have material desires, but we have strong desire to want to be devotees. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We wouldn't stay here. We wouldn't be chanting Hare Krishna. We wouldn't be in this temple room. We wouldn't be here in this class if we didn't have that desire to make advancement and become devotees. At least I hope most of us are in that situation. And that's stronger than our desire for material life. Anybody can go out and enjoy material life, especially in America. I mean, right? Material life, enjoyment's everywhere. You know, we're not, you know, I mean, some people are in misery, and we recognize that, but material enjoyment is there. And we've given that up, for the most part, to take to Krishna consciousness. So that's our qualification. Now, Yudhishthira describes one of the most important attributes of a pure devotee. He says, you're like the captain of the ship in the great ocean and can direct us to our destination. So a pure devotee such as Narada can deliver everyone. Now, he's talking right now to Yudhishthira, who's a pure devotee in his own right, a great devotee. But Narada Muni doesn't just, you know, say, preach to the choir, you know, talking to those who are already devotees. No, he went to Magrari the hunter, one of the lowest people. You know, not only killing animals, but actually almost enjoying animals in pain. And he preached to him and converted him, and Magrari became a great devotee. So Narada Muni has that power to convert anybody to Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada delivered us in this land of Malechus. And a lot of his garbage says, don't go to America. My gosh, you know what's going, you know, they'll never be interested in Krishna consciousness. They're all like meat eaters and this and that and the other thing. Prabhupada came, and Prabhupada converted all of us, despite our bad qualities, despite our faults, despite that we knew nothing about Krishna consciousness. This is the power of a great devotee like Prabhupada or Narada Muni. So it's described that this is when one is very fortunate. Ramanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Taya Bhakti Lata Bhish. Out of millions of wandering living entities, one is very fortunate to give an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of the worship service, the Bhakti Lata Bhish. And it's also described in the Bhagavatam 118.13, the value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter, what to speak of worldly benefits. So the association of devotees is so critical. And we can see Narada Muni's association of devotees transformed him into the great personality of Narada Muni. Narada Muni's association with even the lowest people at Magrari Hunter transformed them to devotees. So that moment's association permanently changes one's life. When one associates with devotees, one's spiritual life has begun. And that process continues. All of us are representatives of the disciplic succession. We're representatives of Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's devotees and Srila Prabhupada's disciples. And when we go out and we become, by representing them, and particularly by giving Srila Prabhupada's words through his books and through, of course, the chanting of the holy name, which we heard from our guru, by being representatives, we can also give that to other people. And it's no less potent. I mean, most of us who became devotees in the early years, we didn't first meet Srila Prabhupada. We usually met his disciples, or his devotees first, right? And they had that power because his power, Srila Prabhupada's power coming through them, attracted us and enabled us to take it up. And then, of course, we read Srila Prabhupada's books, et cetera, et cetera. And then it was all over for us. And we became Hare Krishnas. So that the disciplic succession, that power of the pure devotees is mentioned over and over in the Bhagavatam. Because it really is the most critical thing in spiritual life, having that association. So we're all engaged in devotional service by Prabhupada's mercy. And that's the great benefit of the pure devotee. And that's why great devotees like Narada Muni are being glorified here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because that's Krishna's plans. It's the way Krishna set it up. It's his purpose. He wants people to come back to him through the medium of his disciples. He wants people to come through association with his great devotees, through the spiritual master, and that's the way that we become purified. By serving the spiritual master, we serve Krishna. You know, it's not a theoretical thing. Krishna says this directly. He says, you know, one who says he is my devotee is not really my devotee, but one who is the devotee of my devotee is really my devotee. So this is, that's from Adi Purana. So this is the process. By becoming inspired by these great devotees like Narada Muni and our whole disciplic succession and Srila Prabhupada, and by serving them, serving their words, serving their instructions, we become purified. We gain a little taste for Krishna consciousness. And then we also become part of that disciplic chain, being able to give Krishna consciousness to others. Okay? So, one last thing about the pure devotee. This was a Bhaktivinoda Thakur, sort of paraphrasing the 11th canto. It says, one who occasionally chants Krishna's name is Kanishtha Vaishnava. One who constantly chants Krishna's name is Majjhim Vaishnava. And Uttama Vaishnava spontaneously inspires others to chant Krishna's name by their very presence. So by the presence of Narada Muni, his chanting throughout the world brings people to Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada's presence, his words, his chanting, won our hearts, inspired us to become devotees of Krishna. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. So, comments, questions? Huh? Now I can see this.
In one sense, it seems like we're all self-motivated, you know, because we're all pleasure-seeking entities, right?
We all have some self-motivation.
Yeah, because everyone's seeking pleasure. That's the whole, right. The whole point. So, for us, it may appear that, you know, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. But the only reason is that we want to experience the highest pleasure. Correct?
Well, it's described that there is the real self-interest of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's there.
And I
guess the irony of it, or the is that it's like by surrendering completely Krishna, we experience that highest pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, by trying to please Krishna, we become pleased.
Right.
So it's like, yes, we want to experience pleasure, but we do it not by trying to independently seek out pleasure, but by pleasing the Lord, pleasing the spiritual master, then that pleasure is there automatically.
Right,
and it's
right.
Reciprocal. I think that is the thing that really, the beauty of true spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about that reciprocation. You know, Krishna says, his devotee is totally centered to him. He says, I give myself to my devotee.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's equal. I don't know if I exactly answered. It's a difficult philosophical question that
asking. It's kind of a mystery in a way.
It is,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the point is that oftentimes people think of, you know, austerity and penance, you know, that all of, okay, that's there. But the reason that we're engaging it is because Pramadishvandavartate, basically, right? Experiencing a higher taste by
right.
giving up the lower pleasure and experiencing right. the higher pleasure.
Right. And it's based on love.
Mm-hmm. And it's based on love, right.
Yeah,
that's
which
right.
is actually the highest pleasure. The highest
that's
pleasure
right.
is spiritual love.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was very nice.
I have one question. But that highest pleasure is not comparable with the sense gratification. It's a choice we are making. That, okay, I have some experience of chanting and Krishna consciousness lifestyle. I also have I also had an experience of sense gratification lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I'm choosing to be in spiritual. So that fundamental identity or function on that platform, it's a, I would say, intentional.
Which is
it's not automatic.
Right, that's a good explanation of what Vishwanath is talking about when he said the desire is greater for spiritual life than material life. Yeah, it's intentional, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, because it's not automatic. Okay, I chanted 10 years, now it will automatically I'll be going towards. No, it's constant observation and conscious choice. Mm-hmm. And you made a very nice point. I guess you prepared very well. You mentioned about different personality who confronted with their scholarship. So while you are explaining, in my head also, and I was like thinking like, wow, that's very interesting point. That Gopalacharya, he confronted by Swarup Damodar, with Swarup Damodar, and he accepted the defeat. And he surrendered and he became a devotee. Mm-hmm. With Keshava Kashmir, you mentioned, he also did not accept Lord Chaitanya at that moment, but he understood that he got defeated, but he took shelter of Saraswati.
In Saraswati.
And guided, ultimately became devotee.
Yeah.
Sarvam Bhattacharya, he understood that his pride is smashed, but then he regretted. He examined his own heart. And Madhulila chapter 6, he says, Atmaninda Kari Kaila, that he criticized his own falseness. And that made Lord Chaitanya manifest his six unformed. But with Rupa Narayan, with Jiva Goswami, there is no record that he became devotee, and he didn't take shelter of anyone on his own.
The one he defeated.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we don't hear anything about it.
So that's very interesting that even if we get smash or something, should not depend on ourselves, should go to somebody higher or regret or go to God or someone.
Well, free will is always there, right?
Yes, that's the point.
I mean, we saw Srila Prabhupada defeat people, didn't become devotees. Some did, some didn't.
Yes, right? Correct.
Yeah, that's true. The free will is there, and just being philosophically defeated, in fact, I would say often may not be as meaningful as other things. In other words, if I just think, oh, I defeated that person in an argument, they may just resent it or just feel, you know, well, I just didn't have all the right answers that time. Boy, but if we approach them with love and warmth and our own conviction, right, and our own experience of Krishna consciousness, that's much more telling. That's what's going to win people's hearts more than philosophically defeating them. That was a good point. Thank you. I'm glad you pointed that out.
I was wondering, nowadays, some people are getting defeated, but they don't surrender.
Yeah.
I
wonder who you are.
Yes, definitely. Okay,
Prabhu. Hare Krishna. So, thank you for your point about not becoming morose, thinking that we're not making advancement in Krishna consciousness. It seems like one of the big themes there in the first canto is Yudhishthira Maharaj becoming morose, and you know, right now he's saying, you know, my uncle and my aunt and my uncle are gone, and also, you know, he's saying that, you know, why was I so proud? Why did the whole battle have to be fought due to my pride? And of course, that's a pastime on his part. But we see Narada and others are trying to convince him, trying to remind him of how much mercy he has gotten from Krishna, and how much mercy his family has gotten from Krishna. So I just think sometimes we also need to remind ourselves and remind each other of how much mercy we have from Krishna and how fortunate we are to be here in this setting.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting, as the next verses will continue, Narada Muni doesn't answer his question to begin with. First he gives him about 8 or 10 verses of just pure philosophy. Then later he talks to him about this situation. So Yeah, in that sense, it's like we all need to be reminded of the philosophy, because we do get caught up in our own issues and our situations, which, you know, sometimes are difficult. We have a lot of difficulties. But, I would say when someone like Maharaj Yudhishthira is expressed, first of all, one of the things he expressed some morose for was he felt responsible for killing millions and millions of people in battle of Kurukshetra. So in other words, that was not a self-motivator. That was like, you know, oh my gosh, like, you know, that was his compassion in one sense. But now, and feeling that sense of it was my duty to take care of my uncle, and somehow I haven't done it. So I mean, in other words, I think it's not for himself. He tends to express moroseness and sometimes for left for not doing his duty towards others, because he's known as Dharmaraj, right? He's like the embodiment of religious principles. So if he thinks he's failed in his religious principles, that bother him. It's not like oh, I'm morose about my own situation, you know, like, you know what I mean, like that. And also, of course, it's all part of the pastime, because if he didn't express these things, he wouldn't give Narada Muni the opportunity to preach all his philosophy. So that sometimes happens. You see, many times, actually, devotees who you know are very great pure devotees, they'll ask another great devotee, oh, I don't understand anything, please enlighten me. Well, they could give the, you know, they could do it just as well, probably. Either one of them could speak, you know, pure devotional service, but it's part of the way that through these questions and answers, the back and forth, that the Bhagavatam sort of, you know, unveils itself. Okay, thank you very much. I'll go. Sorry, one more? Yeah.
Sean.
Yes. Go ahead.
Hold on a second.
Can
we keep the mask on?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hearing a lot of free will and being a devotee, coming into this consciousness. Free will has always been a weapon against me, I feel like. So as I come to this consciousness of Krishna, would it be wrong to think to get rid of my free will and just have Krishna will and just let that go?
Hmm. Well, you could try, but you couldn't, because free will is inherent in the soul. It's part of your sarup. It's part of who you are. The identity of the jiva, of all of us, the living entity, one of our qualities is we have free will. Krishna has total free will, so we have, as part and parcel of Krishna, we have minute qualities. So we don't have complete free will. I can't do anything I want. I can't say, I'm going to become a great kirtan leader. It's not going to happen. But we all have some free will, and you can't get rid of that. So the idea is you transform that free will, you use it in the right way. In other words, use your free will to choose Krishna rather than choose Maya. Rather than choose material, you voluntarily become devotees. Because if we didn't have that free will, ultimately, there couldn't be any love. I can't say, you don't have any free will, so you're going to love me. And if you don't love me, I'm going to point a gun to you until you love me. No, you're not going to love me if I, you know, try to force you. It has to be free will. It has to be given voluntarily. So that's why Krishna, at least my understanding, one of the reasons why Krishna has imbibed free will in the living entity. So there can be that voluntary free exchange of love. So yeah, it's not a matter of getting rid of free will. It's a matter of trying to get rid of material desire and taking up spiritual desire and spiritual will. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is the misuse of free will built in free will?
Sorry?
Is the misuse of free will built in?
Is it built in?
Yeah. When you say free will, Prabhupada said there is a misuse of free will already there. Free will means there is a misuse.
It's
already like built in, like there's a constant, I have to like observe where am I heading, what am I thinking, is it pleasing Guru Krishna?
As far as I understand, free will is always there, even if one
who yes.
They surrender, they have. The free will is there. Like someone said, well, if you go back to the spiritual world, would you ever leave again? Prabhupada said, you could, but you won't. In other words, now, once one knows, nobody's going to come out and leave the material world, go to the spiritual world, and come back again, probably. But okay. Theoretically, you could, if you wanted to, because that free will is there. Mm. I don't know if that exactly
is
your question.
Was some clue. I mean, I saw the sign, it said stop. I didn't stop. I went slow. because nobody was around. But within a few minutes, I see a flash, you know, part of me.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, did I not see? Yeah, I saw it. So I did not stop. I just slowed down as if, like, it didn't say slow down or anything. It said stop.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, misuse. I misused my feeling.
Yeah.
I should have stopped. It says stop. I did not get the ticket.
That happens. Yeah, we... Not the worst thing in the world. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Anyway.